Hi there, listener, and welcome to episode 238 of the Ski Podcast. This episode is the latest in a series of podcasts I'm publishing this winter, focusing on women in the snow sports industry. First up, episode 220 was BBC Ski Sunday presenter Shemi Alcott. Second, episode 222 was GB Snow Sports CEO Vicky Gosling. I spoke with former Earn Low MD Joanna Yellowsbound in episode 223. And today I'm delighted to bring you this conversation with Team GB freestyle skier Zoe Atkin. As you'll hear in our interview, Zoe is an incredibly talented athlete. At the age of 21, she's already won gold medals in the halfpipe at the X Games and the World Cup. Plus, she has silver and bronze medals from the World Championships. We recorded this in November 2024 when Zoe was in the UK for a few days. Since then, she's had a fantastic season with three World Cup podiums in five competitions, including a win and two second-place finishes in the last three events. Zoe will next be in action in next month's Freestyle World Championships in St Moritz, so I thought this seemed like a great time to share our interview. I'm sure you'll find her story as interesting as I did. But before we start, I'd like to thank Intersport Ski Hire for sponsoring the show again this winter and making these episodes possible. If you're heading to the snow, listener, don't forget that you can save money when you book your ski hire at intersportrent.com and use the code SKIPODCAST. You'll get a guaranteed discount for ski hire in France, Austria and Switzerland. And to make it even simpler, you don't need to use the code. Just take the link in the show notes and your basket will automatically be reduced. Right, let's listen to my interview with Zoe Atkin. I'm delighted to be joined today by Zoe Atkin, the British freestyle halfpipe skier. Long-time listeners might recall that Zoe was previously on the podcast 3 years ago in November 2021 when I interviewed her and her sister, Izzy. And at the time, Zoe had already won a bronze at the 2021 World Championships in Aspen at the age of just 18. Since then, she's improved on that with a silver at the 2023 World Championships in Bakuriani. Hope I pronounced that right, in Georgia. And Zoe also has wins in the World Cup when she was just 16 and at the X Games and is one of Britain's hopes for a medal at next year's Winter Olympics in Milano Cortina. So hi, Zoe. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, what an introduction. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Whereabouts are you today?
Currently, I'm in the UK taking a little break after a little training block before my season starts. Just a little chill, relaxing before everything gets super hectic.
Yeah. Well, I've seen your schedule for this winter, and I know that that will be the case. But nice to be, in the UK for a change. And I guess the weather is changing slightly as well. Where did you say you've just come in from?
I was just in Austria, and they honestly don't have much snow. And as soon as I left, it started dumping. So that's good for them. It's good for our training. We had like sunny weather for 3 weeks. It was pretty much unheard of in November in the Alps.
For sure. Well, actually, a question I always ask my guests when they're on the show is when were you last on snow? So evidently it was probably just a few days ago. Which resort in Austria have you been basing yourself in?
I was in Kitzsteinhorn just for 3 weeks. Yeah. But honestly, like very little snow, like one run all the way from the top to the bottom and then the half pipe on the side.
Yeah, well, you'll be itching to get back because, looking at what I've seen of the snow reports or snow forecasts, it looks like it's going to start tomorrow and then go through the rest of this week with a meter or more of snow. So that will be good by the time you get back. But I guess the first question I really wanted to ask you, I mean, you mentioned about the half pipe there and that's what you compete in. And actually, I don't know what people's idea of a half pipe is. They've probably seen it on the TV and some resorts have a half pipe. But what we're talking about, what you compete in, is a super pipe, right? Which is right. Much bigger.
Yes, it's huge. It looks even bigger in real life.
I went out to Cromontana a couple of years ago with my kids where they have a super pipe. And we went in it and it's just ridiculous, the size of those walls. I mean, I was starting to get nervous going like halfway up the wall, not even getting anywhere near to the top. But you know, my understanding is that there aren't actually many super pipes around to train in. Is that an issue for you?
Yeah, definitely. There are very few in the world. It's a really niche sport. Like I tell people what I do and they're like, what is that? No, it's definitely very niche, but I think now we're getting a couple more in the world, more super pipes and also mini pipes, so smaller. So it's kind of more inviting, less daunting to get into it, which I think is really good for the growth of the sport. It's definitely huge. It's intimidating. But yeah, you can start like just like ski down the middle and then eventually you can start going up the walls and then eventually you know, you start going 12 feet out. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, what prompted you, you know, you're a freestyle skier, you know, you have other disciplines such as slopestyle available, or possibly even more frightening, big air. I don't really know. What prompted you to go for the half pipe?
That's a really good question. I feel like I say this a lot. I feel like there's kind of a misconception about like extreme sport athletes that we're all just like crazy adrenaline junkies. But honestly, like maybe I am a little bit, but I do kind of feel like I was really drawn to the half pipe because of kind of like how precise and meticulous you have to be. Because if you know, you have to get the pop off the top just right. If you don't pop enough, you land on the top and then bounce all the way back in. And if you pop too much, you land in the middle. So it's kind of such a small margin of error. And I find that kind of scary and exciting and like a really, I don't know, it's like an interesting place to like hone your skills. It's really fun. It's a little crazy, but I find it's a little exciting.
And there's a very narrow margin for error. I mean, I guess that's probably the case in all of these things, but much more so in halfpipe, for example, than slopestyle.
Yeah, there's, I mean, it's a vertical wall, 22 feet tall, and you kind of launch off. I don't know if you've seen, I mean, I'm sure you've seen halfpipe skiers. They launch off the top, and then we have to land back on the wall. But there's the deck on the top, which is a flat, so you don't want to land on the flat from really high up, and you obviously don't want to land at the bottom in the middle. It's all about timing, precision, flow, and to do that like six times in a row with all the tricks in a competition, like it's, yeah, you got to be kind of in the zone.
And it's interesting there that you mentioned the flow, because that's evidently a key part of it. But you know, you've been training now in Austria at Kitzsteinhorn. How much time would you spend training actually in the pipe itself? I'm guessing you also train off maybe airbags and things as well.
Yeah. We do airbag training, gym training, of course. And yeah, we do spend a lot of time in the half pipe. We honestly just do so many repetitions of our tricks, like over and over and over and over and over, just to really get in that like perfect timing, you know, the grabs, the style, whatever kind of flair you want to put to the trick, and just really kind of like minimize your, like the chance of anything going wrong in a competition or just in general. But that's why I feel like competing is really fun, because I feel like that's kind of the part where you're like, okay, like I know I've got this. Like I've, you know, controlled everything I can control for. Like I've done all the preparation. Like now I just got to go ski. But yeah, training is being able to kind of just nail in those reps over and over again. Yeah, build that confidence to be able to go into a competition feeling really good.
For sure. And you mentioned, you know, we, you know, in this context, who is we? Is it, are you training on your own with coaches, or are you in part of the GB Snow Sports freestyle team? Because I'm trying to think who else does halfpipe. I'm not sure. Are there other British skiers who are doing halfpipe?
No, currently I'm the only skier on the team. So I train with my coach, but I am a part of the greater British freestyle team. We have a bunch of slopestyle skiers. So occasionally we do train in the same places, but usually, surprisingly, we don't really train in the same places, because the places that have half pipes aren't the places that have parks, which is kind of counterintuitive. But occasionally we get to come together and have a big, we had our, one of our physio's 60th birthday was in New Zealand about 2 months ago. So we all got to go together and have a big feast dinner for her, which was really fun. Like good to see them, because, you know, we don't get to see each other super often. Pretty much everyone who skis half pipe, I mean, it's such a small community and there's so few people who do the sport. It's just so niche, as I said, like super random. So we all kind of train together. Like we usually all go to the same training camp. So it's usually only one place in the world that we all are at any given time.
Okay. So that's really interesting. So firstly, can I ask, and who is your coach?
My coach's name is Joe. He's a Canadian. He used to ski park, but more recently he was doing film stuff. So he filmed for like movies in the backcountry. So he kind of has like, a well-rounded skier experience.
Okay. And then my second question is, you're all training together. So are you therefore aware what your competitors are kind of rolling out as new tricks?
I mean, Yeah, usually. I mean, I feel like we all kind of train together. There's like a camaraderie there, and you know, it's like nice to have other people there working on stuff. Like, I guess like we are competing against each other, but we're all kind of hyped for each other to learn new stuff and kind of push the sport forward. And it's always really good to see other girls like throwing down really cool tricks and stuff like that. So yeah, in a sense, it's maybe a little weird, I guess, than competitive, but also like, I feel like it's really like inspiring. At least for me, I feel like it really pushes me to be my best. And I just try and focus on myself and like what I'm working on. And then I can't, when the competitions come, like I kind of let things just, I mean, I have to let the results be what they're going to be. And there's only so much I can control.
Thinking about the competitions then, am I right in saying that in a competition, assuming you qualify, you get 4 runs?
Yeah, we get 2 runs to qualify. So best of 2 runs. And then if you make finals, you have 3 runs to land your run.
So do you play kind of percentages for that first run down in the final? Let's say, you know, you've got a certain routine that's going to get you a certain score, assuming you pull it all off, put that down first to get you on the leaderboard and then hold back your high scoring tricks for later.
Yeah, totally. I think there's definitely a bunch of strategy in it, because you obviously want to land a run to be able to, you know, build your confidence for the next run and obviously just to do well. But, you know, you want to do as well as possible. And then maybe your hardest stuff you don't have like as locked, or there's a little bit of doubt of like, maybe I might miss a grab, or maybe I'll fall, or maybe it won't be perfect. So there's always kind of that like more, I don't know, it's a little more risky. So usually my strategy is to put one down that I'm confident with and then build on that and let that kind of build my confidence and momentum. But sometimes, you know, someone might see that as like a waste of a run. If it's not a good enough run to, for example, like land me on the podium, it's like, why are you doing that? You should spend your 3 tries getting that harder run. But I think it's also kind of like a question of like, I guess, like what skier do you want to be, or what kind of skiing do you want to like show off to people watching? And for me, I feel like I want to be the kind of skier that's smooth and styly and has good grabs and like not flaily. And I feel like if I have to tone down the technicality to have just a very clean run, I personally prefer that, because that's just the kind of skiing that I want to represent. But then there's definitely people who are doing harder tricks or bigger tricks, you know.
What about the, you know, when you decide to bring something you into play, into competition for the first time? You've obviously practiced it a bunch in training, but never, you've never rolled it out in a competition. Is that a prearranged plan with Joe?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I think very far ahead. So I feel like I'm always kind of thinking about different runs I could do and different combinations of tricks and what I want to do. But yeah, I think there's always kind of a general idea of what I want to do, but in the moment, you know, things might change based on my confidence levels, what happened in the previous runs. Because honestly, I'll sometimes, for example, last World Championships in Bakuriani in Georgia, I had such a terrible training that day of finals. I didn't do a single trick in training. So I kind of just had to pull it out in competition. So I didn't do maybe my hardest run, but I was like, I'm going to do what I know I can do. I know I can do it clean. I know I can land it. I know I can go big. And you know, kind of the comp nerves, like just bring that out of me.
Oh, and when you're at the top, I think you said you're going to hit the edge. You're going to do 6 moves in every descent. You've got those combinations. You're not going to change your mind like halfway down. You know, you're going to do this, 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 this.
Yes, it's definitely predetermined for sure. But there's circumstances where, you know, things go wrong and you kind of have to wing it. Like, for example, I mean, this is when I was at the Olympics, it was my 3rd run and I had fallen on the 2, but I had no speed. So I kind of messed up my run and I kind of had to improvise on the way down. So the run I ended up completing was not the run that I planned to do. So there's kind of a little bit of like a, if something goes wrong, you got to do your best to make it to the bottom, because you don't want to just give up halfway through, because you never know, like, you know, what other people do, or if that's a run that, you know, gets you on the podium or something like that.
So you've got to be thinking fast, but, you know, as well as having that plan and knowing what you're going to execute when it comes to it. And just, we'll definitely come back to the Olympics and actually more in relation to competition. But you mentioned the, you know, off snow training. What kind of training are you doing there? Is it, you know, trampolining? You've got aerobic training as well?
I mostly do strength training, a little bit of aerobic and cardio, but I do a lot of like lifting. So I'm strong, so I can, you know, when I do fall, I do my best not to fall because I don't like falling 22 feet from the air onto ice. But if I do fall, I have the, you know, ability to be able to take those falls and, or not fall, like be able to kind of take a really deep landing and be able to like power through it. So I think strength for me has been the most important to be able to ski at the highest level.
I mean, I think people are extremely mindful these days in all types of athletics that strength and conditioning is a super important part of it. It reduces the risk of injury. And evidently, the type of event that you're involved with does carry a risk of injury. And we'll come on to that later. But Bakuriani in Georgia, where you picked up a silver at the 2023 World Championships. And you've had another World Championship medal as well. But I'm going to take a punt here, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to guess that you view your greatest achievement as your win at the X Games. Would that be right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that one in particular was the, you pulled off, you're talking about your strategy for competition. It was your last run where you pulled off the big run to secure that medal, right?
Yeah, it was.
It's an invitational-only event, the X Games, as well, isn't it? So you get that email, I think. I remember talking to Kirsty Muir, who said she had that email in our inbox. That's how it works. When that comes in, it must be pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, so exciting. I remember the first time I got an X Games invite in the general public's eyes. Kind of the Olympics is like the pinnacle of our sport. But I think for people who are maybe more like core skiers, quote unquote, kind of see the X Games as our pinnacle event because it just has so much history with skiing and action sports. So I like grew up watching the X Games and wanting to go and be invited was just like such a big thing. Yeah, that's definitely a focus for every year. While it doesn't happen every 4 years like the Olympics, it's every year. It's still like really important for us. So I think, yeah, that's definitely what I would consider my biggest achievement. And yeah, the last run when the pressure's on, that's a really good feeling to land.
Sure. And, you know, you had success again there this year with a silver. You know, I mentioned Kirsty Muir just now. I think she won bronze at those same games. And I've interviewed Mia Brooks on the podcast as well. You're all a similar age. You've all, you know, had success at the X Games. Do you actually, you don't see them at all? Do you have much crossover with them?
I mean, it's funny because you would think that we like do so much because we do such similar sports, but like the half pipe scene is so removed just because like half pipe is so random. Like it's so niche, like who skis half pipe? Like it's just like what mountain has a half pipe, you know? So we kind of like spend our training times like following wherever the half pipe is. Whereas I think the slope style people, you know, have like a choice of what park they want to go to. And so they all go to the same park so they can all, you know, train together and stuff like that. So I do get to see them at events like X Games where they have like an athlete lounge and I get to hang out with them, or like bigger events where it's both in one, like World Championships. But it's really good to watch them crush it. It's really inspiring. They're really killing it. And yeah, it's cool to see.
I recently interviewed Vicky Gosling, who's a CEO of GB Snowsport. She was talking about all of the challenges of Beijing, and you know the build-up for that was exceptionally difficult. And you already referred to it. You know, you got a top 10 there, finishing it in ninth place. But you said that run didn't go perfectly for you, and you hadn't landed a few before. I think it was very difficult. Not only was it difficult because it's a COVID environment, but it was a difficult conditions that day, quite slow as well.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it was, it snowed because I mean, it doesn't snow that much there. So it was kind of very like a free, crazy thing that it snowed, but it snowed so much the night before. So I struggled a lot with like speed. And I also think, I mean, I think I just like put a lot of pressure on myself because it was my first Olympics. I had, you know, thought about this moment for years and years, and I don't know. That whole season, I felt like I didn't allow myself to really enjoy it the way I usually do. I was just putting a lot of pressure on myself and like all the expectations and everything. So yeah, and I think I'm really grateful I got a top 10, and I feel like I'm really happy I was able to put a run down at the Olympics, make finals at my first Olympics. I think I was 19. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this season and next season with the next Olympics. I'm feeling a little bit more experienced, a little more settled, a little more, like, I guess, established in my like place in women's skiing. Yeah, it was a really amazing experience to go to the Olympics. And my sister was also in the village. So it was really an honor to be able to go there and be a part of the team.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to the next Olympic cycle shortly as well. I mean, one of the things that Vicky mentioned and other athletes I've spoken to who are at those games is that, you know, you said there's a lot of pressure on you, but there's also a lot of pressure on you from the point of view that you were, you know, testing multiple times a day. And people have told me that, you know, they'd see athletes who tested positive who were like whisked away and you wouldn't see them again. Suddenly, you know, they were there and the next minute they were gone. Did you feel that sort of pressure from the constant testing and the environment as well?
Definitely. I think it was just a weird situation. I mean, it was with the pandemic and everything, like no one really knew what was going on, and trying to focus on like performing at your highest level when all this stuff is going on. I missed my flight, my original flight to Beijing, because my test didn't come back in time. My COVID test, so they wouldn't let me on the flight. I had to get a new flight, but there's no flights to Beijing because no one can fly to China because it's locked down, because everyone's locked down. And it's just all these, you know, hectic things happening around you when you're trying to like prepare for like the biggest moment of your life. I feel like it's definitely kind of just a crazy experience. Like, and I feel like looking back now, I'm like, that was so crazy. At the time I was like, just got to get through, you know, focus on skiing and stuff. And now looking back, I'm like, that is so crazy, getting tested every day. Yeah, there's all these rumors going around. It's like, oh yeah, this athlete tested positive, like they're like in quarantine now, you know, all that stuff going on. So It's definitely pretty hectic, but it's cool, I guess, to be a part of that in a way, like kind of be a part of like a historical games in a sense. Like
one hopes it was a unique event that won't be repeated. Yeah. Because not a great experience for the athletes and, you know, for everyone else across the world as well. But you mentioned you were at Beijing with Izzy, your sister, as well. And I mentioned earlier, now, when we last spoke, I spoke to both of you. Listeners might not be aware, but Izzy was Britain's first skier to win a medal at the Olympics. She won bronze in the slopestyle at Pyeongchang 2018. But unfortunately, shortly after that interview we had in November 2021, she broke her pelvis shortly before Beijing. So I don't want to dwell on that or focus on her because I'm talking to you today. But I think that after Beijing, you know, in that summer that year, the two of you took some time off and went traveling around Europe, and maybe they're, you know, able to relax a little bit more after that.
Yeah, her breaking her pelvis, that was definitely a really, I mean, I don't want to speak for her, but I'm just very proud of her for, you know, getting through the recovery of that. Like, that's a really big event for her, obviously very stressful. She didn't make it out to the village, and I'm glad that we got to at least, you know, spend time together in that village. And I feel like that those are like memories I'll always cherish, like just being with her, because I feel like, you know, I mean, I grew up skiing with her. She's always been my biggest inspiration in everything that I do. And it's always been a dream of mine to go to the Olympics, but because of her. So I feel like that was really special. And then, yeah, so after the Olympics, just being able to just have someone there, especially, I mean, because she was disappointed because of all of her, you know, injuries and overcoming all of that. And I was disappointed because of my result and how I felt like I didn't perform as well as I wanted to. And I feel like we were just able to, like, I don't know, really, really connect and kind of have that shared experience. And I feel like that really brought us closer.
Did you get an Interrail, a Eurail, and travel around like that?
Yeah, we traveled around Europe. It was super fun. I was still technically in my gap year before I started university. And she had just finished university. So it was like this perfect time, just finished the Olympics, like no more training, perfect free time, just sister trip. Like, it was a great time before I had to go to university and lock in again. But yeah, it was great.
And I mean, you mentioned you grew up skiing together. And so I guess it would be a good point to just look at your background a little bit. You know, listeners will know that you represent, you know, Team GB, GB Snow Sports, but your accent sounds like it's from slightly further away. You've been based, I think you were brought up in Maine, weren't you? I take it both of your parents are skiers, but presumably one or both of them are British by descent?
My dad's British. He's from just outside Birmingham, and my mom's Malaysian. So we kind of have like a international kind of family going on. And we live in Utah now in the US. Yeah, kind of all over the place. But yeah, we ski all over the world, train all over the place. Like we're kind of always traveling. But yeah, my parents learned how to ski when they were later in life, but they really enjoyed it. So they took me out when I was, I think, just turned two. So I've literally been skiing my entire life. And we're just a family of skiers. Love it.
And that must have been a big decision for them, because I think they decided to move you from Maine over to Utah because you both showed talent as skiers, right?
Yeah, and which was a huge sacrifice from them. And I feel like I've always been so, so grateful for the support that they've given me and just the belief for me and my sister to really pursue our dreams in skiing. And I think we were really lucky that we were able to like have the opportunity to do that and be able to, you know, ski a lot more than just on the weekends and be able to really train and get to the highest level. And I feel like, yeah, just my parents are so supportive in that way, but also just in every day, like in my training and in my competitions. Like they're coming to all my competitions this season, which is going to be super fun. It's always good to see them at the bottom. Yeah, just very ski-centric family, very supportive. And I'm really grateful for that.
Excellent. And your base in Utah is Park City, is it?
Yeah, Park City.
So that's where you did a lot of your skiing when you were younger. I think you told me last time maybe it was Park City and Snowbird are your favorite resorts.
Yeah.
When you're not training, are you allowed to go kind of off-piste and just explore the mountain, or are you forbidden from doing that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, occasionally, like, I definitely just spend so much time in my ski boots that when I am not training, I prefer to just not be skiing. But if there's a snowstorm and we get powder snow, I'm definitely gonna be in that. It's so fun. But honestly, I don't do a ton of free skiing. Only when the conditions are really good, because I'm a little spoiled with my snow in Utah.
Yeah, the greatest snow on earth. It's on my bucket list to go and check it out at some point. And you already mentioned about being a student. You're studying at Stanford University. Are you specializing in any particular area there?
I'm really indecisive. So I haven't decided what I want to do yet. And we don't have to decide until a little bit later in our university careers. So we'll see, but I'm definitely really interested in psychology, as I've been working with, you know, a sports psych for my sport. And I find that really interesting. And I feel like working with her has just like opened my mind to so many like interesting things going on in the brain. And it's been really helpful for me. So that's maybe an option, but I kind of like the STEM fields. Like I like doing math. I've been coding a little bit. I've been learning how to code. So that's been fun.
How does the studying fit in around your time commitments for skiing?
For the past 2 years, what I've been doing is just taking the winter quarter off. We're on a quarter system. So it's 4 quarters a year. And I've just been doing the summer quarter instead of the winter quarter. So the winter, I just have completely free of school to be able to ski, train, compete, do all the ski stuff. And then when the season's done, I go back to school and get to hang out on campus, use my brain a little bit. Yeah. So it's kind of separated. As the Olympics, the Milan 2026 approaches, I will likely take more time off school to focus on training a little bit harder, skiing a little bit more, but we'll see. I'm kind of trying to play it by ear.
Yeah. I mean, you said to use your brain again, but I think it's just using a different part of your brain because, you know, you're thinking, as we discussed earlier, thinking the whole time when you're doing a run, when you're in training, thinking about how to pull moves off. So, I mean, a lot of it is muscle memory, but there's a lot of thought that goes into it as well. And, you know, we mentioned Beijing, possibly, you know, a little bit of pressure on you there, maybe not the result that you wanted, although top 10 is still pretty damn good, getting top 10 at Olympics. But in the seasons after that, you've come back super strong. because he picked up, you know, podiums, I think six events in a row all the way through 23-24. And that run was only broken in the autumn, or our autumn, over in New Zealand. And that was still a sixth. What do you put that strong run of form down to?
That's a good question. I feel like after the Olympic season, I was, or after the 2022 Olympics, I was definitely a little bit unsure about, like, if I wanted to continue skiing and how I wanted to go about that, especially with university and everything. And there was a period there where I wasn't sure if I was going to come back. And then I kind of decided that I was going to try one more season. And if I would commit to the season and try and do my best, and if I didn't like it by the end, then I would just quit and that would be it. And I feel like being able to be like, okay, I'm just committing to this season, I feel like I was able to kind of take the pressure off of myself and be like, no expectations, I'm just skiing to see if I still want to do it. And I feel like I was able to find that kind of passion and motivation and just love for it again. And I feel like, yeah, just being able to take the pressure off of myself, and because I think a lot of it's internal, just being like, no matter what happens, it's okay. And that's when I won my first X Games gold. And then that just built so much confidence for me. And then the momentum took. And I just feel like since then I've been feeling a lot, you know, better about training, a lot more just passionate for it. And yeah, I feel like being able to take a step back for a second was really helpful for me.
Well, that's great. I mean, you mentioned, you know, you work with a sports psychologist and you're interested in that psychology side of things. We see it in all different sports, and I guess probably, you know, in life in general. I guess you probably spend a lot of time doing positive visualization prior to competing.
Definitely, yeah. I think, honestly, the mental side of skiing is what I struggle with the most. I think I struggle a lot with fear and overcoming that, and also just being in a positive mindset. And I feel like for me, I think momentum is really important. And yeah, the visualization, as you said, and kind of it's like that self-belief, and you can only really believe in yourself if you've kind of established that, you know, confidence, like a reason to believe in yourself. And that's kind of an ongoing process. You know, you're never going to be like, okay, I'm like, whatever, like, I'm so confident I could do anything. You know, it's always like, okay, I can do this. Now I can do this. Now I can do this. And you're constantly kind of stepping it up, like building that momentum, and it kind of snowballs. Yeah. I find that being able to talk through with my sports psych about things like that, and, you know, how I'm feeling, and trying to like optimize and control everything that I can control, has been really helpful.
Well, it's been a great run of form. And, you know, this winter's World Cup is starting shortly. I think in early December, you got your first event over in China. And then also this season, as well as the World Cup events, there's the X Games again. I think you've had that email to go out to the X Games, and that'll be in January in Aspen. And then the season will finish off with another World Championships going to be in Engadin in Switzerland this year. And that will be towards the end of March. So there's probably six major events or six big events that you've got this winter. Do you have a plan? Do you have a priority at all within that?
I'm definitely X Games. Obviously, it's always a big one for us. And then, yeah, World Championships, because that's only every 2 years. I think it's just going to be an exciting season going into like the season before the Olympics and building up to that. And I think for me personally, I'm working on a couple new things that I want to put in my run. So I'm going to be focusing on that to try and step up a little bit, which should be exciting. Yeah, I'm honestly just feeling really excited for the season to get after my last 3 weeks of like straight sun training. Yeah, I'm frothing to get back to competing. So I think it'll be fun.
So after this, you had that training spell over in Austria. And I'm guessing, I'm looking at my calendar here, we're probably saying it's about 2 weeks away that you need to be in China. How far in advance of the event will you go out there?
Only a couple of days. We go there, okay. We get a shuttle to the resort, which is a couple hours away from Beijing. And then, yeah, we start training and qualifying and then finals.
Will you have a European base in between times, or will you go back to Utah?
I'm here right now, and then I'm going back to Utah, and I'm flying that way, like around the Pacific. So yeah. A nice time to chill and relax before the season, because once China starts, it's pretty go, go, go.
And you referred to Milan Cortina 2026, the next Winter Olympics. I presume that you do need to hit a certain minimum threshold this season to qualify for that, right?
Yeah, qualification starts, I believe it starts in China. But honestly, I'm trying not to think about it. I feel like I'm just going to do my best to ski as best as I can and focus on what I can control. And then I think the qualification will take care of itself, hopefully, as the season progresses. It's exciting because to me, it feels so far away because I'm focused on this season. Yeah, it's coming up. It's crazy. I can't believe it's been 2 years since the last ones. It's crazy.
You know, evidently, we wish you all the best from, you know, Team GB, the Ski Podcast listeners, etc. And I don't want to make a thing about it. However, you know, I know Kirsty Muir is coming back from injury at the moment. You know, Mia Brooks has got a great record as well. All of you potential medalists out there. But let's just see how this season goes. Take each event at a time in the meantime. So we'll be following you over the season. Thank you very much for your time today. And yeah, I wish you all the best for this winter, Zoe.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me. It was really fun.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview. I enjoy all feedback about the show. I'm always interested to hear what you think. So please do contact me on social at the Ski Podcast or by email, theskipodcast@gmail.com. We have had a bit of feedback, and that might be related to the fact that we have a competition at the moment where you can win a fantastic pair of Valon goggles. Bray Estate on iTunes said, "I've been a follower of the Ski Podcast now for many years, starting during the pandemic. It kept my passion for skiing going during the restrictive years and has added to my knowledge ever since. Always something new and interesting. Every feature has something. Ian presents with great sensitivity, tackles issues close to my heart, and interviews with great talent, managing to seamlessly weave his own experiences and knowledge into the conversations. Keep up the good work." That's very kind of you, Bray Estate. Also, Elizabeth Rose said, "This is a lifesaver podcast, getting me through to April for my next ski trip. Enjoying listening to the back catalogue of amazing content. I like all bits, snow reports, specials and feature interviews, equipment reviews, regular guests, new guests, etc. Thanks for raising awareness of climate change and the focus of women in snow sports and outdoor mountain activities. I'm looking forward to taking my family to some of the new places suggested, possibly by train or EV, and be brave enough to try ski touring. Thanks from Elizabeth." Well, that is very kind of you. If you want to stand a chance of winning the Valon goggles, just leave a review on iTunes or on Spotify. There are now 250 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and 190 of those to listen to in the last week. If you've enjoyed this episode, why not go to theskipodcast.com, take a look around the tags and categories. You're bound to find something of interest. In the last week, 63% of our listeners were in the UK. 14% were in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Ethiopia, Antigua, and Lebanon. If you like the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. You can follow us, look for that button, press it now, give us a review or leave a comment, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'll put you in the drawer as well to win the goggles. And book your ski hire with InSport Rent using the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes. You can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at Ski Podcast. And you can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of the podcast. Look in the show notes for that link. I'd like to thank Zoe for giving up her time to join me. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.